I said, Wilson, excuse me. And we are all ears, sir. So if you want to give us an opening statement, introduce your people. Of course, everything that we do here is recorded and indexed. And it's broadcast live, so there you go.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Watson, and I'm the Oil and Gas Supervisor for the Oil and Gas Commission. To my right is Kathy Hutton. She's our office manager, fiscal control manager. So she'll be able to, if there's any accounting questions, to help. First and foremost, the Oil and Gas Commission is one of the few self-funded agencies, so we take no general revenue money. The majority of our income comes from the conservation tax. It's currently 4 mils, which basically means $4 for every $10,000 worth of oil or gas. We collect that tax. We just raise that to 5 mils. That'll go into effect January 1st. And we also get money from fees for drilling permits, hearing fees, a few other things. We have one office. We're located in Casper. We have 24 employees in our office and four to five contract employees. And then we have 11 field techs, field inspectors, and they're located throughout the state. We don't have other offices. They work out of their house. So we have, one in Douglas, Buffalo, Kemmer, Rock Springs, and a couple in Casper. Some current activity that's going on, despite the rig count of 22, we still get an average of 400 to 500 drilling permits a month, basically so they keep their place in line. So if you were to come to our office, you might think there's a drilling boom. So we're very busy in that aspect of it. And we recently raised our drilling fees to, it was 125, we raised it to 500. And we're going to use those fees to pay for a new database system. And I'll get into that in the budget request. Another portion of what we do are hearings. And we're busy there too. We do an average of 150 hearings. We have hearings once a month. And majority of those are done by examiners, by our engineers. But usually 10 cases are before the full commission, which includes Tom Dreen, the governor, Bridget Hill, and then two private members. So the hearings, we're still busy in that way. One of the other things we're doing, if you read the news, is we're plugging orphan wells. I've been with the commission for 32 years now, but as director only a year and a half. When I took over, we had approximately 1,200 orphan wells. And by the end, that was in April 2014. And by the end of that year, that number ballooned to 3,800. So we've been very busy plugging wells. Because we had so many, in the summer of 2014, we just had one contractor working. We basically do 300 a year. We'd have them done in 4 years. Well, once we got that bigger number, we upped our game. And so instead of one contractor, we now have three contractors working, plugging wells. And we'll have we've been doing it for 18 months, and we're just at a little over the 1,000 mark. We've had a few more to do in December. It's always weather dependent.
When you're plugging those wells, is there a cost to the owner of that well? Do you charge them the cost of that, or is that just on your, that comes out of your conservation tax?
Mr. Chairman, there's no one to charge because they're orphan wells. Mm. So what we do to start with is the companies, for whatever reason, aren't reporting. Most of the time, they've gone bankrupt. So we have a hearing, and we pull whatever bond amounts they have. And then once we pull that bond, then they basically become our wells.
Okay.
So we use that bond money. And if whatever the bond money doesn't cover, then, yes, we use the conservation tax.
Chairman?
Yes.
Mark, with the increase in the conservation tax mill, was that split between operations and the reclamation fund, or did all that go into the reclamation fund side? How was that extra mill being divided?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I mean, it basically goes into one pot. But, you know, when we raised the conservation tax, that was one of the reasons was the additional wells to plug. And then we also had a couple of full-time employees that we never had before, and that was used to pay for that. And when we do that, we have to get industries backing, so we have to go to them first and make sure they're amenable to it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I've heard there's been problems, it also goes in the CBM area, where the companies have the liability out there of the wells, and so they set up a shell company or find a shell company. They sell the asset to the shell company. That way they're out of it, and then the shell company files bankruptcy. Is this something that you deal with, the Oil and Gas Commission deals with?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, there's been a few cases where they, in the majority of cases, it's a larger company transferring to a smaller company to a smaller company. I've only seen a couple cases at just recent, you know, when I started looking into it, where the company transferred all the good wells to another company, and then we were forced, and then they kept all the wells that were shut in. But that's a very minority of the case that we deal with. The majority of times it's just a smaller company, and they're basically all their eggs were in one basket when it came to the CBM play. And once the price of gas dropped, the wells were no longer economic.
Mm.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On that point, Mark, is that, since you've started, hasn't that been a point of emphasis, reviewing those transfers to other companies that's within your purview, and to make sure that there's a financial means there so that what Senator Burns is saying doesn't happen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gehr, we actually just changed one of our rules for bonding rules, and we increased the bond from $75,000 to $100,000. But as part of that language, we're allowed now to – we have 6 months after wells have been transferred to look at the viability and the economics of the new company. And I put together a team now where any time a company transfers wells, even if it's one well, to get the whole staff involved and look at the economics of the well that they're transferring, go out in the field and look at the condition of it. And it's something, you know, we just never did before. So we've learned some.
Okay, Mark. Other questions? Go ahead.
Okay, and the final item
just
I was...
Now I got a question.
Thank you, Senator Chairman. Just a quick question. You were talking about how the Oil and Gas Commission is self-funded, and I missed that part. Could you go over that again for me, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wasserberger. Yes, so we collect it's a conservation tax, and it's 4 mils, soon to go up to 5. So basically, for every $10,000 worth of oil or gas sold in the state, we collect $4, along with, you know, we collect fees for drilling permits, hearings, injection wells, and we get a small federal grant. So between all those items, that funds our agency.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
And finally, the last thing I wanted to mention, Mr. Chairman, was the database system that we have now. We're moving up to it. Basically needed updating. We're going to newer system. One of the things I found when I took over was 30% of our staff actually inputs data into our system. So under this new system, it'll be an e-permitting system where the operator fills in all the information. It's going to be a lot more efficient. And that system will be paid for by the increase in the drilling fees. And with that, that was basically my introduction.
Okay,
if you have any other questions.
Just one quick one, and you might have covered it, and I've been kind of typing and working, but on the just in your narrative, Mark, that you talked about, explain to me what these Class 2 injection wells are that you've got the primacy.
Class 2 injection wells, the Class 2 program, all the injection wells, it's an EPA program, and they're delegated to the states. Class 2 wells, which we have jurisdiction over, there's two. One are injection, whether it's water, gas, CO2, for enhanced recovery.
Okay.
And the other one is injection of fluids or gas for disposal purposes. So those are the two items that fall under Class 2.
Is there much you know, started in the 50s, all this water flood and, you know, injection in these old oil fields. But you see much of that anymore? Is it more into CO2?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harshman, I've seen maybe three water flood projects in the last couple of years. You know, most of the water floods are in the Powder River Basin in Minnelusa, and there hasn't been that much drilling for that. We've had a couple of CO2 projects going in the last couple of years, but, you know, the big thing's been, you know, the horizontal play, fracking. That's where all the action is. So if anything's going to happen in the future, it's, you know, right now we only get, for these tight formations, we only get 5% of the oil out of the ground. So if they could, even if they double that, you know, that's where the future is going to be, is recovering more oil and gas from these tight formations.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Before we get into the budget, two things. I'd two questions. First one is, what's your backlog and turnaround time on permits to drill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we used to pride ourselves in doing it in 30 days or less, but when you get 500 drilling permits a month, it's a little bit longer. So now we're into the 30 to 60 day realm, but I've told all the operators, if they have wells that they're actually going to drill, that we'll fast track them and get them done within less than 30 days. So there's never been an operator that can say, well, we didn't get our permit because it took too long. The majority of these permits are just renewals so they can hold their place in line. But, for instance, I met with BP Amoco this week, and they have wells that they actually want to drill. So I said, give me a list and your timing, and we can put those ahead of the queue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the other one, I guess not a question, but I've had a couple of operators kind of come and tell me and say it slowed down quite a bit, and they said that, in fact, the comment from one of them in passing was for the first time that they could ever remember that it took longer to get a drilling permit out of Oil and Gas Commission than it did the BLM. And so, anyway, I'll pass that along, and I guess I need to tell them if they have they need to make sure the renewals are coming more than maybe 60 days or so in advance, and if they got something that is urgent that they can call your office, and they'll fast-track it for actual drilling. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that's right. I don't know if I agree with the analogy with the BLM because they take up to 2 years. So,
okay.
I'll let you know what a couple folks have said out there. So, thanks. Okay. Appreciate it.
All right, let's take a look at your budget.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, page three is just the general budget, as with all agencies, and then if you go to page seven, those are the exception requests. So I assume I've been listening all week. That seems to be that you want to just go through the exception requests.
Okay.
So the first exception request, the first priority, is the orphan well plugging, and the details are on page 24. But basically, we are budgeted at $2.5 million per year plugging wells back when we only had 1,200. So what we've done is asked for an additional $2.5 million of our own funds because now we're plugging. You know, probably this year we'll be in the 650 well range. So basically, we asked for that additional amount to go from one contractor to three contractors, and the governor approved that request.
Okay. What page is that on?
The orphan should be on page 24.
All right. Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. I know a lot of those wells are probably in the Gillette area. They CBM wells, and they're relatively shallow. What does it cost per well to plug those old natural gas wells?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wasserberger, our experience over the last 2 years is in the $6 to $6.50 per foot is how we calculate it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Mark, can you tell us a little bit, how do you determine you know, if they've actually, when they are orphaned, is it after somebody's gone through bankruptcy? I mean, you've got a lot of companies out there that are sort of hanging on the verge, but when do you determine that they don't have the ability to plug wells?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stubson, it's a process which it starts out with, we have an additional bond for these companies where it's $10 a foot for all the wells that aren't producing. And what we find is when we renew their bonding or find that, you know, in the case of CBM, they went from all their wells to no wells. So once we asked them for millions of dollars for idle well bonding, they couldn't come up with that. We actually have to have a hearing. There's a formal process. And at that time, they can't come up with that idle well bonding, then we have to pull their bond.
Other questions on this particular exception request? The next one is Unit 0101.
Right. 12. So the second, the risk-based data management system, that's just and that would be found on page 12.
Right.
And I kind of alluded to this in my introduction. The system we have now has been in place for 15 years. We wrote it internally, and it's still a great system. It provides information to not just industry, the public. Almost every state agency that's involved in energy uses our system because we collect production for all this, for the state. But the risk-based data management system, it's a company that we looked at some different companies to upgrade this, and the risk-based data, we call it RBDMS. It's a system that's in place in 22 other states, and it's a specific system that's written for oil and gas regulatory agencies. So it's very specialized, and the good thing about this is they come in, they'll basically, you migrate your data over, but they'll train you to do any future programming, and you still own all your data, you own the system. So basically, this system will eventually, over 3 years, it'll be $1.3 million, but this is the cost over the two-year period.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mark, did you have to – I don't see a case, business case or anything with this. Did you have to go through the OCIO as part of the approval of this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stubson, we sure did, and I have the business case analysis with me. And
I was just curious if you guys snuck out of that process or not, but apparently not.
Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
Mr. Chairman, so number three, computers. This is basically just what ETS recommends to all agencies is there's a certain lifetime to all your computers and printers, et cetera. So this was just the amount to replace several computers and printers over the next two-year period.
Okay.
So number four and number five, I guess we could talk together.
Sure.
So these are shelving systems, and I know that you discussed that earlier this week. We actually do have shelving systems that we just built out of 2x4s and that for certain things. But
so
careful, you never know what will get picked up.
They can be down in certain cases. But these two filing systems, we have a filing system that's a specialized system that's actually on a track, and they're motorized, and they move. And so you don't have a lot of choices on who you can get these systems from. So basically you have to go to the original company. And once again, it's a case of you have 500 drilling permits a month. You have 150 hearings per month. There's a lot of data, and it has to be stored. And so the exception request four and five are two systems that basically we're just adding shelving to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Mark, based on your move into new electronic systems, are you going to start keeping more of this data in electronic form? And do you foresee or are you on at least a glide path to having more documents saved electronically rather than having to take up shelf space?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, That's true. We, you know, for instance, we have production data from the 20s, and that took up 3 files, and so we scanned all that information and put it on backup networks. You know, we're not to the point where we want to throw away all our paper, but I think eventually, you know, every agency will probably get to that point where once you have, all these drilling permits and under this new system, they'll all be electronically inputted. So do you have to print out the paper and put it in a file?
Okay.
And then moving on, number 6, transportation equipment. This is basically trucks. You know, we have our 11 field techs. They're in the field daily. The 220,000, that's 20,000 per truck. And basically, we buy them, we trade them in every year and a half. You know, we trade them in between 75 and 100,000 miles. I lived through the 80s, so I know when, you know, if you have to cut back, you know, next to probably our salaries, the trucks are our next biggest item. The governor did decline this and said that he would rather us come in one at a time, you know, when trucks mile out at 100,000 and fill out a B11, maybe see if you can keep them longer. But, you know, the field guys are out in the field and they're by themselves a lot of the times. And so, you know, there's some point where you don't want to be out in the field with a truck with 200,000 miles on it. It also diminishes your trade-in value. So that's something basically we'll just deal with each truck that comes in.
Okay.
Item number 7, legal advertising. This is the advertising that we're required to do by statute for all our hearings. You know, at 150 hearings a month, we have to advertise in both the county where the wells are located as well as in general circulation, which would be the Casper paper. So that's what that request is for, and that is all funded by the fee that when they file their hearing files, there is a filing fee, and so that covers a majority of that legal advertising.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. I noticed that your hearings are increasing at a rapid rate, actually, from 812 hearings in 2012 to 1,900, almost more than doubled. And what's the reason for the increase?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wasserberger, the reason that is back in 2012, all the horizontal wells were drilled in a 640, which is basically one section. And in the last couple of years, they've gone to 1280, which where they drill their horizontal lateral for 2 miles. So that requires a spacing hearing to actually set up the spacing, prove the drainage of these wells. And with all the fight for operatorship issue and all the drilling permits, they have to have a spacing hearing approved before they can do their drilling permits. So probably 90-95% of the hearings are for all the spacing of these wells. And then they have hearings for additional wells to drill within those spacing units. So basically it's the horizontal drilling fracking play that's gone on the last couple of years.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Actually, I had another question, but that raised a question going back to what Senator Perkins was asking. Have you been able to get to those hearings timely? Because that's before your application goes in. I wonder if that's where maybe the delay might be coming in from some producers. Or have you been able to get to those hearings
Mr. Chairman,
on a reasonable basis?
Representative Greer, yes, we get to those hearings. You know, they're done every month, and, you know, the examiner hearings are done by the same engineers who are also approving the drilling permits or part of the drilling permit process. Maybe we're a little bit behind on actually writing the orders, but once we have the hearing and the commission approves the examiner's recommendation, we can still approve the drilling permits.
And then, Mr. Chairman, my question I wanted to ask was kind of moving back up to the 30,000-foot view with declining sales prices in oil and gas. Is how are you looking at for your revenue stream from the conservation tax for your operations? I mean, is this sustainable? Have you looked at that long term, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years? And then on top of that as well is how much of a reserve do you keep in the abandoned well fund? How is that holding up? Or the orphan well, sorry, but the orphan well fund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, let's start with the first question. Do you want to look up the second well while I'm doing that? The reserve. Yeah, looking out in the future, you know, I treat the Oil and Gas Commission as a small business where, you know, I know I need to cut back. When the price of oil cuts in half, my budget gets cut in half. So the fees, the increase in fees will help a lot because they're not based on the price of oil, and I think that's going to make a big difference in the future. Looking out 4 years, boy, as far as oil and gas prices, that's a tough one. I'm on the Craig Committee, and we argue back and forth all the time on what it's going to be. It's always been an up and down business, and we've always been able to, you know, we have the ability to move that conservation tax up and down as things change. And then the reserve amount is $2.8 million for the orphan well fund, and that's already set aside. Yeah, that's in addition to the exception request.
Okay. I think that answers my questions. Thanks.
Okay.
I believe there is one more. The last one is a continuation, that pickup truck and equipment. Mm-hmm. That's just a truck that falls under another budget under the injection. Well, the UIC program is actually a separate budget. So that's just that $6,251 is just a percentage portion of a full truck is all that is.
Okay. Any questions? All right. So we've covered your exception request. Any questions on the 600 or 900 series? Guess hearing none, I'm going to let you off the hook. We appreciate you taking the time to come. Cheyenne, to meet with us.
I have one more question.
All right.
So High Plains, are their wells are no longer idle, but they're now abandoned? High Plains Gas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Geert, yeah, those wells became our wells in December of 14.
Okay. Oh, so it's been a year with those.
Right.
So we'll get around to getting those plugged shortly.
They're in the queue. You know, we do it geographically. You know, we don't do it by company. We pick an area, and it'll be several companies.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Anything further?
Mr. Chairman, just
yes.
One quick follow-up. Just in looking at your 600 and 900, I see that Bob King is working as Orphan Well plugging project managers. Is that on a contract basis, and he's just works on the scheduling of those crews, or how is that working?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stupson, what Bob does is he coordinates, you know, as our field staff are working this summer, he's working on the next 4 years. So he's looking at geographic areas. He has a contract land person that works for him. We have to contact every single landowner before we can go on their land so they know and what schedule. So he's working on what's going on ahead of time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Merry Christmas to you, too.
All right.
What do you think?
Don, what do you think here? We
put time to get...
I don't
know.
Mr. Chairman, education folks are here. They're willing to wait and you can break for lunch. Your call.
Is that do we have the food here now?
I was told that it was going to arrive at 11:30. I can go check if
everybody wants to do.
Let's.
How long do you think 205 is going to take?
Mr. Chairman, between an hour and an hour and a half.
You want to start?
No, let's come back at, if it can be 11:30, why don't we come back at 12 or 12:15?
Yeah, I guess we'll come back at like 12:15. What's this?
Is this your picture? Did you change it, or is this the one you showed me last night?
What's that?
Is this the one you showed me last night?
This one's this morning.